is... Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eita, welcome to another installment of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics with Fresh and Botsang, where we cut through the noise and focus on power, accountability, and the questions many may avoid asking. From schools and soldiers to politics at home and theatre abroad, this is Politics with Fresh and Botsang.
Good morning, Fresh.
Later.
Sharp is it?
What's up?
I'm cool. I'm easy. Morning to the followers and the viewers.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, my brother. Thanks.
It's been a crazy week.
Oh,
no.
I don't know.
It's been a crazy year so far.
No.
And this year is only 3 weeks in. And then it's been a crazy year.
Yeah.
Because it's been a year of Trump.
Yes. And then, listen, it's actually on Wednesday.
On the 20th, yes.
20th, it was the anniversary. It was the first
of the inauguration.
Of his inauguration.
Yes.
And he decided to be at Davos.
Do we know why the 20th of Jan is the inauguration date for majority of US presidents?
No. No, I actually never checked.
Because the 20 Jan is when majority of them were inaugurated, including Obama, I think Biden, Reagan, I think Nixon also 20 Jan. So I'm curious as to why the 20th of Jan.
I actually never thought of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
Maybe one of our viewers will tell us why. Yeah. But actually, you know, before we even go to our topics for the day that you just mentioned, one of the things that crossed my mind that actually there's been a hot potato in the country is the happenings in the courts, the Concord decision and the shooting at the court, where sometimes during the course of the week, sometimes last year we spoke about the safety in courts, where two people were shot outside the Poisons Magistrate Court, actually three people. And then two were instantly killed, and the other one is a lawyer who was representing them, and it's in critical condition.
Mm.
You know, it talks so much about the safety in our courts. But again, I was asking myself, how far can the court authorities and the police protect the witnesses if the shooting happened outside the court?
Because exactly.
If the people are hunting you, they may just wait for you to drive away from the court.
Exactly.
They don't have to come to
court. Yeah.
But I think the way our criminals are brazen, and this is a murder case that these people were attending to in court, they made sure to make highlights. They shoot them in the court premises. Like, even if it's outside, but on the staircase.
Do you think it was a statement?
I think it's sending a statement.
Because you could have followed them home.
Yes, you could have let them. Yeah. Look, I don't say people must be followed and killed, but I'm saying for them to do it.
To be that brazen.
Yes, and where they're supposed to be police and authorities and security.
And they're just wearing caps, no masks.
Yeah, no, nothing. And it also shows on the challenges the police service is faced with.
Mm.
Look at the people who murdered DJ Warras with surveillance cameras there and everything zoomed using technology. We know the faces of those people. Nobody has come up in the society and say, I know this person, I know where they live, and I've seen them before.
Do you think a lot of these assassins are brazen because they know that the people whose bidding they're doing will take care of them?
Look, I think with the Madlanga Commission, the General Mkhwanazi's allegation, and what we have seen in the last few months, it shows me that there's been confidence in the criminal system.
Yes.
In criminality. You know, to say, no, don't worry, be an inkabi or an assassin, we'll take care of you. Whether you go to jail, we'll be released, the case will be dragged forever, you'll get bail. They have been in control or in charge of the systems so much that's why it's easy for them to recruit assassins. Because they've been getting away with it. But I think the criminal justice system must actually, you know, tighten the arms of the law so much that they should implement brazen measures as well towards certain forms of criminality.
Yes.
I know that murder and others and rape and all, they are, what do you call them, levels, 5 and 6 of criminality. I think we should relook at the laws whereby the parole system and the benefits of some kind of criminal activities must be separated from common crimes.
Oh, yes,
it must
yes.
not only be the period that if you commit a level one crime, then you get maybe 2 years. If you commit level five crime, you get 15 years, but the benefits are the same while you are in prison. Mm-hmm. You eat the same food, you are treated the same way, you are entitled to the same parole system.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we arrive at a point where things like murder, you are not, you know, especially when it's planned and you are an assassin, mm-hmm. you don't get parole.
Sure.
You serve the full sentence as presented by the court. And I say, if we can arrive at that, it will come more as a deterrent.
That you know if you get caught, how home night go young.
Exactly. You know, and also, I also want to suspect that some of the people, and not majority, and I'm not being xenophobic, of the people who are used, that's why it's difficult to track them. It's illegal foreign nationals because there's no fingerprints records. You know, they're illegal in the country. But, Fresh, we are in the middle of investigating as a nation the criminal justice system, the police system, the NPA, and all that. And people go and shoot people in front of the court. You know, and while we've been talking to the justice system to change, to be more hard on criminals, that's a challenge. Another thing that came out of the court this week, which caught my attention, and somebody may ask, why is this political? But I always quote you, Fresh, and say, Fresh said, even what we eat is political these days, everything we do. The Concord decision on the customary marriages or recognition of customary marriages.
So basically what they are saying at the Concord is, if you've gone through a customary marriage or lobola or mahadi or dowry, whatever it is you want to call it.
Yes.
The minute it's been concluded, you're married, full stop.
Yes.
You can't bring a prenup in afterwards.
Yes.
After the fact.
That's what the judge.
And the only way you can do that is if you go through the judicial system already. Let me tell you what happened with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got married September
11, 2002.
Okay. And lobola was April of the same year.
Before.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
But it was only a year later when we were having a conversation with my dad that he asked what regime we're married under. And then we realized that we actually never discussed it. Okay. Well, now we're just in love, want to get married.
The September marriage was the civil union.
Yes, was the home affairs.
Yeah.
And he advised us that, listen, my advice to you guys is, if you can retrospectively come up with
post-natal contract.
Yes, with a contract of sorts.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, because you are both in business, if I make a stupid business decision, it affects her and vice versa.
Okay.
So my dad advised us that fix it. It has nothing to do with loving each other more or less. So we got a lawyer who then made us go through the whole rigmarole of changing the contract.
Okay.
And then it had to go to a judge.
Did you have a contract?
Prior.
Nothing. Oh,
so
you're married blindly like
we married blindly out of love, and divorce is not an option.
Mm.
But the long and the short is a judge had to sign it off.
To do that, yeah.
That we are now married in out of community with accrual.
Okay.
You see.
Okay. Yeah, because that's what you chose.
That's what we
chose. Now, Fresh, this is where I have a problem with this current Concord decision.
Yes.
That for all these years, for those who didn't know that, and I always emphasize this to people that in South Africa, it's not called actually customary marriage. It's the recognition of the customary marriage.
Oh, yes.
The Act of 1998.
Mm.
And again, since 1998, we had the constitution in 96, the customary marriages that were mainly, if not all, for black people, and majority of them were for people from homeland states and rural areas.
Mm.
And they were presided over, most of them, by the chiefs, then donors, understand, and the kings in the royal families and all that. But for people or black people in townships, actually, when you look at it, nobody presided over customary marriages.
Mm.
Nobody. Therefore, recognizing it as an official marriage when there was no presiding officer, You see, when people get married in church, it's still Home Affairs, because Home Affairs issues these marriage certificates to churches.
Mm.
So like when I got married in an Anglican church, despite the fact that I was Lutheran, and that marriage certificate that was issued was the same marriage certificate that comes from the marriage register of Home Affairs. But when you look at customary marriages, it's Abo Malome le Borakadi who preside. They don't even preside. They meet and talk over your marriage. Now, when the government recognized that marriage, they failed to create an environment where they are correcting what they thought is not right. You have met the four requirements of a customary marriage.
Mm.
You know, lobola negotiations, celebrations, and handing over of the first one, obviously, it's being adults, two adults consenting. Mm. The last one, handing over of makoti. It ended there, you were married. Now,
if makoti was never handed over,
the marriage is not concluded.
Okay.
There are four basic requirements of...
So the celebration alone marriage is not enough.
It's not enough. You can, and people should be very careful, and I've always pronounced on this because I got my fingers bent. You negotiate lobola. There must be that. First of all, you must be both adults. Mm. You must be both over 18 and agree that you are getting married to each other. You must consent to the marriage as adults.
Okay.
The second part is you go and you lobola, even if it's not completed. And you... The third part, there must be a celebration. Some, they call it masavis and others. The marriage has to be celebrated. You are not yet married. The fourth element is very important. Because you are being married by malumes, rachadis, aunts and uncles, you, normally and traditionally, your parents would have not met your spouse.
Mm.
That's why your spouse has to be handed over to your parents. Then you are married customarily.
Mm.
But then people would elect, like you did, to go and... how do you call it, and go into a civil marriage with an antenuptial contract. Now, what the Concord has ruled on at this time is that marriage of community of property or marriage of customary, it's marriage in community of property automatically.
Mm.
That's what the South African justice system prescribed since 1998, is marriage in community of property. Now, if Botan went and got married for 15 years...
Why? I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't it be assumed... I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Yes. Why can't it be assumed that when me and Sibongile get married, because we're two individuals left and right,
yes,
it's out of community until we opt into community or property. So why can't it be the other way around?
You are not being a devil's advocate, actually. I think it's a valid and fair question.
Why can't we opt into community or property?
Yes. Why is the system automatically putting us into community of property and not out of community of property?
Yes.
And say, if you opt in, why did they flip that off? Mm-hmm. And these are some of the questions, right, that, you know, I wish people had legal minds like you to could have asked that to the judges, to say, or to the lawmakers, you know, because judges don't make the law, they implement or interpret it. But I'm one of the people who is very uncomfortable with this. Thanks, I'm not married, you know, to anybody in any form. But I'm uncomfortable with this decision, because what do we do retrospectively? What do we say? I know the law is never applied in retrospect, but you are married in the past.
Mm.
So this new Concord decision, it is going to bind and govern people who are customarily married, whether the marriage is registered or not. Because the Department of Home Affairs for many years, not of Home Affairs, of Justice, has been postponing to put a cut-off date on customary marriages, because to be registered at Home Affairs. I think the government did not do enough to send that message, especially to people in rural areas, to send that message to say, go and register your marriages for the benefit of the offsprings, the surviving spouse, in case there's death, or when there is divorce. This has created a lot of discomfort. Some legal minds are saying they don't know why people are surprised and excited about this, because it has been the practice that when you are married customarily, you are married in community of property. But I think they are missing the point. That is not the issue. The issue is people who are married in lobola, bogadi, dowry, or customarily, if they now want to turn and to register their marriage, they cannot now register their marriage with an antenuptial contract. because it's already marriage in community of property. Yeah. Like what you did when you got married, you went after with a postnatal contract that was signed off by a judge. I think a lot of people will have to go through that process. At the moment, actually, your dad's and your lawyer's advice were excellent at that time, because look what is happening today. It's actually what your dad and your lawyer told you to do 20 years back.
Yes.
You did it as a family and your own decision. Mm. But now the court has ruled, actually, people must go and do that.
So
if you have any intentions, and you are married customarily, you have any intentions to move to anti-nuptial or contract, actually it's not anti because you are already married according to the court, go and do a postnatal contract and let it be certified by the court.
Postnuptial.
What did I say?
Postnatal.
Postnuptial, yeah.
Post-neptual. Are you feeling broody? Maybe you want to be a father again.
I'm not going that way. Maybe marriage, but your kids, no, and I'm not going that route.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Zex Bantwini Le Nandi had a similar situation where they had to divorce on paper and remarry.
Yeah.
I think they might have been fixing something similar.
Yeah, nullifying. Quite a few people, I know quite a number of white people have done that for financial purposes. Some of my ex-colleagues. But quite a number of people will go that route. They will go and in order to do that. But I think what the law should do due to this judgment, because this is not enacted into law. It's a Concord ruling. It has to be applied from now moving forward. But I think the law must have a provision to say those, and this is just me thinking outside the box, those who want to not break the decision of the Concord, come forward, let the system help you to have an acceptable, that's why I call it the post, not the pre, because you are doing it after. It will help people. Otherwise, couples are going to start not trusting each other. People will now stop if they wanted to go into civil marriage. But again, you know, like we spoke on the radio during the week, it's also very difficult that we are still being governed by colonial laws. Our marriages are determined in terms of the Christian laws and Roman Dutch laws and all those foreign laws to us. It's one of the prices we are paying as a nation for leaving our customs and cultures behind. We left them behind us, and now we are doing a catch-up time. Even in doing the catch-up time, we still want to implement and apply colonial rules and practices. Instead of consultation, it was when we discussed this on the radio during the week, it was Trudy who raised up and said, but what happens to, or is it one of the callers who said, what happens to our cultures? Where are our elders? Where is consultation with traditional leaders? Who can help to can craft the practice and the law? We left that to courts that are informed by Roman Dutch law, British laws, religious laws, and to determine and inform our customary law. But yeah, as they say, a law is a living document. We'll keep on working and changing on them. Good luck to those who are planning to get married. I told you I'm going to get married, I think, after this Concord ruling. But I've always said, if I marry again, I'll marry out of community of property and profit and loss, out of everything. You are literally...
Bring your 5 rand, I'll bring my 5 rand.
I don't even want a quail. I don't want anything. I just want you, the person. Nothing else. I've been a proponent of Lobola. And you know that practice, our traditional practice of the Khomotsa Bogadi?
Yes.
I've been an advocate of that. After this Concord ruling, I am now even afraid that I'm going to refuse to pay Lobola, because then automatically it becomes community of property.
Oh, you can just save everyone time and do a contract before Lobola and everything is sorted. I think you guys are complicating this. It's almost like you have time to jump through a million hoops. You have time to jump through a million hoops, but you don't have time to just sign a simple contract before the Lobola. Then it fixes everything.
Come now at the end of time. You don't have time to think contracts.
Anyway, we need to move on to the next thing. Before we move, inauguration day for the U.S. moved to January 20, beginning in 1937, following the ratification of the 20th Amendment to the Constitution, where it has remained since. A similar Sunday exception and move to Monday is made around this date as well, which happened in 57, 85, and 2013. This resulted in quite a few anomalies, but generally 20 January is the date.
So they just chose the date.
After ratifying the contract in 1937. I'm sure there was a reason, but we don't have time for that right now. A lot happening in education, people complaining that the system is broken when it comes to the placement of grade ones and grade eights. We're having accidents happening with scholar transport, quite a lot happening.
Yeah, Flash, you know, it's sad because it's impacting on the foundation of our generation, the kids, the future, especially grade one.
So
I looked at the news during the course of this week and monitored what happened in Durban, specifically in KwaZulu-Natal province. You know, it's again, we are reacting as a nation or as a government. And I'll tell you why. The fact that there are South Africans today who still do not know that our constitution prescribes that anybody who lives in this country is entitled to benefits like any other South African. It's a serious problem. It's an indictment on the government to say we failed to educate the people. We failed to bring the communities closer to what foreigners find. Our constitution does not prescribe for camps. We are now discussing, just before we close in December, we discussed the new act that I think we should visit again, the Immigration Citizenship and what do you call it? It's Immigration Citizenship and Asylum Act, the new one. They combined all. I'm one of the people who is saying, I don't think our government is in the right direction to put all these legislations into one, the immigration and the citizenship and the asylum into one law. We are going to be governed by one law. I think they should have kept it separate because as citizens, we would have felt special if we have our own law governing us. Unlike bringing people who came here as asylum seekers and immigrants who are just residents, but they are not citizens. Nonetheless, this situation of foreign nationals being entitled to education as well as medical benefits in their country, it's showing the strain, and that's the problem of government. But if now there are people who look at the kids and say, this is a child of a foreigner, lives the same street with me, and this child was allocated space at school X, and my child did not get space, then it becomes a problem.
Because that's the question I was asking the team on the radio the other day on 938. You must tune in 938.co.za or 938 FM if you're in Johannesburg. And I was asking the question, surely if there are 100 positions for school, for children, and there's 200 people applying, priority must be given to the first 100 South Africans first, surely.
Yeah, that's how
a just system would work.
Yes.
Regardless of whether I applied late or not, you should get priority, surely.
And that's not how it works. That's not. There's no prioritization due to citizenship. It doesn't work like
that. Then I don't think it's a just a law or way of doing things.
That practice or rule by the Department of Basic Education is informed by the constitution of the country.
And I get that 100%.
That looks at us as all equal.
Sure.
And it has created a problem. Right now, we are sitting with a problem in Durban. I looked at one lady who was interviewed. She said, I did not even apply late. I applied timeously.
Yes.
There are foreign kids there whose their parents applied at the same time with me or timeously as well. But they got space and my child did not get space.
No, I think it's wrong then. Because if guided by the Constitution, you're going to disadvantage your very own people.
Exactly.
And then tomorrow turn around and say you're being xenophobic.
Yeah.
When all you are saying is, surely I should have more rights or be more important when it comes to prioritizing basic basics,
exactly.
Education for our children, healthcare, services that citizens are paying taxes for.
And this
surely should be prioritized.
And again, I've been saying groups like Operation Dudula wouldn't be conducting themselves the way they're conducting themselves if, one, the practice and the rules were fair and prioritizing the citizens, and two, if those people were also informed. Although people are saying, even if the constitution says that, it doesn't make sense that somebody from outside is giving priority than me.
Mm.
And especially with the strange resources, you know, more and more people are moving into the cities, into urban areas, and there's not more schools being built. And so it's a serious challenge and an indictment to the government.
So what do we do?
Well, Fresh, again, let's go back to the change the laws, amend the laws, and learn how to prioritize. Sometimes you don't even need to, you don't break the law when you prioritize your people.
Mm.
And that's my thinking. You know, if I have food in the house and my kids must eat first before I give my dogs or the children next door, and if the food is there to be shared to say to my kids, instead of having 3 teaspoons of sugar, I have 2, let's donate a teaspoon to my neighbors. That's how it should work.
Can we change it to 2 oranges over sugar? Sugar is actually not good. And the sooner we can wean our children off sugar, the better.
Yeah.
So let's not use sugar as an example, please.
Anyway, the government is increasing the sugar tax. Everything on Tuesday, there's a talk of increasing it.
I think it must be bigger than sugar tax. It must also look at advertising of unhealthy foods.
I've got
it. The UK have now, I think, made it illegal for TV to advertise fast foods.
Yeah.
During times that children could be watching TV.
Yeah.
I think anything to save children from unhealthy food, but also as parents, we can't say it's not my responsibility. Because ultimately, I might advertise a cool drink, but you are buying the cool drink for the child. Yeah. So you must take responsibility at some stage for what your children are eating.
I think the health authorities, they can go to an extent, especially for the benefit of the kids.
Yes.
Because as parents, we can parent them when they're at school. We don't have control.
Yes.
They can go on legislation, the volume of chemicals, understand, enforcing it, chemicals and sugar that is in the soft drinks and all those, not only soft drinks, many other things. Enforce the law to say you cannot have this. But yeah, so with the schools, I think the government must start moving and shifting the policy. Find a way of accommodating your people first. And also this thing of people living, and this leads us to the discussion about transport. I stay in St. John. My daughter goes to the school in Lodium. And exactly because years back, we became victim of the same thing. We could not place her on school. Okay, for me, it was about time on school within the area. But there are people that I see coming with kumbis and minibuses, kids from outside Centurion.
Being bused into Centurion
to go to school. And even the people in Lodium, they're probably saying, but your child is being bused from Centurion to Lodium.
Exactly.
And all those things. And what does it create? It creates our children to be on roads in the morning. And for me, it also pains me when I look at a child waking up at 5 a.m. To go to school, which is 9 kilometers away, 10 kilometers away, because of transport, because of peak hour, traffic, and because of picking up other 15 kids. And look what it has led to now.
But surely forward planning as town and city planners, I mean, you know what to anticipate. Based on trends. So you know that Centurion, Midrand and other areas are getting built up at a rate that surely then we will need a new school.
Mm-hmm.
We will need a new clinic. We might need a new hospital. We might even need a new university.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there's only X amount of university places available, but you have more kids who qualify to go into
university. Yeah.
What happens to the overspill?
Exactly.
So part of me feels like we know what is coming 10 years from now. But we're not planning for what's coming 10 years from now.
We were praising the class of 2025
and
you last week, and the minister is very happy. Everybody's happy to say we have increased the percentage, record breaking. We are not worried where will those, you know, thousands of bachelor's or university entrance students will go, because we didn't erect and create tertiary institutions or universities. And it's not only about town planning, Fresh. You know, even when it's town planning, I think somewhere there you have administrators whereby they see people who come to apply for erecting new houses, new apartments, new residential places, shopping malls. Mm. You can see as a city or a town that these things are increasing.
Yes.
There must be a coordination somewhere between the infrastructure planning division and the administration.
The city planners.
The city planners that will highlight to the mayoral committee, then to the provincial government, to say we are seeing a booming of people moving into our city or our municipality. Therefore, we may need these amenities to be able to accommodate the people.
Because the weird thing is with a lot of developments, a massive development will happen.
Mm.
So they must now upgrade the roads.
Yes.
Often that's what happens. You must upgrade the roads so that it doesn't affect the flow of traffic.
Yes.
Because you're going to increase traffic volumes.
Yes.
There was a massive development in our area. So they had to upgrade the sewage system. Because the pipes literally ran through my property.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to, I think there's a servitude on my property that is owned by the city of Johannesburg because of this massive sewer line. We're doing all of these upgrades of everything else, but there are no new hospitals, no new clinics, no new schools. So we're worried about sewage.
Because you don't want to be...
We're worried. But we're not worried about where we're going to put all these children
school. Yes.
We're putting up more shopping malls than we are clinics and schools. Please make it make sense.
Well, I don't know how it makes sense. Where do people get money to shop when all these shopping malls are going up?
People have money.
They must just tell me, where do they get the money? But you're not talking about that. Look at how and you know, it's a sad way to also start the show. The death of Media Source, I think 14 kids that passed on a horrific car accident, school transport accident. And we are seeing the government reacting to this. You know, again, during the week, 3 days after that accident, I've talked to people in Sebokeng, Everton, Lenasia, Soweto, and the south of Joburg, and they're saying, yo, you must see the cops on the road pulling out school transport, checking the vehicles, confiscating some fraudulent documents from drivers, and what do you call it when you impounding some of the unroadworthy vehicles.
Yes.
Why are we overreacting? Is it not what the police are supposed to be doing at all times? Fresh, I've said it many times.
Mm.
South Africa is the world leading country on road carnages. We have some of the best roads in the world, believe it or not. People don't believe that.
No, I've seen it traveling overseas.
Yes.
That we might complain about our roads, but there's poor roads out there in the West.
Look, when I arrived in Germany, I looked at the roads. I'm like, where's the autobahn?
Yes.
It's just that it's 4 or 5 lanes, concrete, or no speed, but they're not nowhere near our roads.
Mm.
But we lack enforcement.
Yeah.
We are not enforcing the laws. And this is one of the things that caused this accident, despite the recklessness and the misbehavior or the conduct of the driver. I'm not judging it, but according to what we're saying.
It's the quality of that road.
Yeah. That you are driving without a valid public driver's permit. Mm. There's a lot of things that comes to mind. To drive a public vehicle, whether it's goods or passengers, you need some level of experience.
Mm.
Now, a 22-year-old, when did that person acquire experience, which includes discipline, that you are transporting human beings' lives, not experience to drive?
Sure.
There's a difference between a private driver and somebody who drives. That's why they require a special permit.
Sure.
Because of the way you should conduct yourself. It's 7 a.m. in the morning. We are not allowed to double overtake in South Africa. Learner license basic requirement. You overtake 4 vehicles at high speed carrying 15, 16 children in a minibus taxi. That is lack of education. That is lack of experience and ill discipline.
I was going to say, I think it's a multi-pronged problem.
Yep.
Let me tell you why I think it's a multi-pronged problem. Because we have a lot of unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of families that might have a kombi or 3 taxis will say, Butsang, you're done with school, go get your license and come help in the family business.
Yes. Yes.
And sometimes,
that's the case.
Sometimes you'll have a PDP, sometimes you won't have a PDP.
Mm-hmm.
You also have parents who can't necessarily afford transport.
Yes.
So you'll take the cheapest that you can.
Exactly.
And often the transport is jam-packed with kids.
Mm-hmm.
You leave home at 5 in the morning. So you don't even have time to check how many other kids are in the car before little Pipey goes into the car. So as much as we have a responsibility to make sure the car is not jam-packed, you're worried about, I must put food on the table. So you just hope that the car is roadworthy and that there aren't 20 other kids before your child walks in there.
Yes,
because in the ideal world, I would be walking little Pipey to the kombi, realizing that it's full and me saying, my child is not going in there.
Yes.
In the ideal world, we would do that.
Yes.
In the ideal world, a road as busy as that road would not be in that condition.
Exactly.
The fact that there's not even a yellow line, you can't even go left. There's no emergency lane. There's nothing. And that road is busy.
Very. It's one of the busiest roads in the valley.
And about Tobatha Renegeng will tell you where that road for them is almost as notorious as Moloto, where it's an accident waiting to happen.
Yes.
It's also recklessness on the road where we drive like poo because we know we can get away with it.
Yeah.
There's so many things here that led to
that. There's no law enforcement. But you know the fact that it's a truck and people say, will say, I'm hammering on this too much. I'm one of the people who have been in the transport family department for many years. And one of the things we have repeatedly submitted to government in amending the laws of the country, our recommendations, the government does not have to always accept what the Botsangs are saying, but to change the travel time of trucks on the road, because it's hazardous actually for a truck to be on a public road during peak hours when people are going to school or work. And I don't take away the responsibility of private drivers and public passenger drivers. I'm not taking away that responsibility. I'm simply saying it is we can alleviate the situation as a nation and learn from what other nations have done. And I've used the example of Mozambique next door.
Ah, yes.
To say Mozambique has a rule of regulations that the trucks are not allowed on the roads between 5 a.m. and 9 a.m. because people are moving that time.
Yes.
Trucks are not allowed in Mozambique on the roads between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. in the evening because people are going
to rush hour.
Yes. And for example, passenger vehicles like buses are not allowed to drive after 9 at night.
In fact, it's not 8.
It's in the city. It depends. Yeah. Mozambique, because it's a federal. Sure. It depends on province.
Yes, because I know that in some cities, it's 8 p.m.
You must
park your
taxi. But you do get some places where there's public buses that take, because there's night schools at universities in Maputo. So we get buses leaving town at 10. But they're specific with special permits. You don't allow trucks in Mozambique in the city.
Mm.
They haul us the trucks. If they come with goods from anywhere, whether it's import, they go to a warehouse, they offload to smaller trucks that will go into the city. You see, you just make those small regulations in order to aid the situation. Because I can sit here and say, if that truck was not on the road at that hour, there could have been an accident of another calendar, but it could have not been to the level where we are, that, you know, 14 lives have perished. Mm. But again, we are reacting. We are talking the afterwards. Mm. The police are all over the valley and the south of Joburg today because of this accident has happened. They are targeting specifically scholar transport, something that should have happened prior.
And in fact, it needs to reach a point where we know what is wrong and right, and we don't do it.
We don't do this.
I'll give you an example. Every year we go to Miami for the Winter Music Conference in March.
Mm.
And every time we go to Miami, in fact, any city I go to, I want to hire a car and drive myself.
Okay.
So often I'd be the designated driver.
Mm.
And you should see what happens when you get to a school zone in the U.S.
Yeah.
Everyone slows down.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a thing.
If it comes speeding, from the people.
If you are speeding, you're the only one speeding.
Yeah.
And a part of it is, I might kill a kid. A part of it is also law enforcement, that I will get bust and there will be consequences.
And even the other drivers,
users,
they will call you out, actually, when you start behaving in a manner that endangers their children.
And it goes back to what I was saying about Dikong. We've reached a point where we don't care anymore. We're self-centered. Everything is me, me, me. What I want is what's going to happen.
Yeah. It's responsibility. We can't be blaming the government all the time or law enforcement, which is trained and they are taken by. But I've said it regarding border management. I'll say it again regarding traffic. It is the black South Africans, white South Africans, Indian, the citizens and the residents and the owners of this country who are actually committing these crimes.
Yes.
It's us who are bribing. It's us as officials who are receiving bribes. It's us as policemen who are ignoring an on-road with a vehicle passing in front of my eyes. You know, when I was driving to the studio this morning, there was this high ace, and I'll be specific, it was a high ace. You know, high aces are over 20 years old. Now imagine a high ace, fresh, the way that car was twisted in front of me. It looked like it was going left, but it was driving. It even came in front of me. I asked myself, how did this vehicle get a roadworthy certificate? And there's cops there. This guy drives on the yellow lane, change lanes. He even waves for Johannesburg Metropolis.
Mm.
Boop, he waves for them. He's passing. Normally, a law enforcer would not let majority of the taxis that I see on the road, they will never let them drive on our roads. You know, I remember my former ministers, Sbundebele, used to say these taxis are coffins on wheels. That was 2009 when Sbundebele said that as the Minister of Transport. And I look at them today and say, I can't believe the taxis that a minister had declared them coffins in 2009, some of them are still getting certificates of fitness and they are on our roads.
How come you can buy the certificate?
And that's why I'm saying the challenge is me buying and the guy who's selling, the corrupt official, we are a problem. But, you know, may the souls of these young children rest in peace. It's a sad state of affairs.
I think the long and the short is we can only point fingers at government for so long. We must all take responsibility.
Let's take the responsibility.
And we must also remind ourselves that it can't be that this tragedy has happened and next week we go back to regular programming. Because then all we're saying is we actually don't care about our children.
First, trust me.
I don't know any other nation where children are perishing at the rate our children are dying.
Yeah.
If it happened anywhere else, it would be a crisis.
Exactly.
Ronald Kwaitsi.
It's okay, yeah. Trust me, after 2 weeks, the valve will be back to normal. These kids will be buried. The traffic officers who are on the road will not be there. The premier and the president will not be addressing this issue.
You know what would be dope also? That not only are there consequences, we must even have a register of this person is in jail because they didn't have a PDP and children are dead. I don't even mind if we put them on billboards. Something.
Like we are now, they will talk human rights, but like now we are creating a register of sex offenders. We must have a register of murderers in South Africa. People who murder people, not just sex offenders, because that's not the only problem. We have a very high murder rate. We should have that offense register. And not to say to punish people for the rest of their lives, but like I said, we must segment the kind of criminality.
Yeah, but I heard there'll be an NGO that says it's unconstitutional.
These NGOs, one day we must have
and then the Popia Act. Popia Wemi.
We keep on passing laws that are putting us into danger. Anyway, bro,
Hi, man. Where do you want to go? Do you want to go to the SNDF?
Yeah, you know, that's an important thing to discuss.
In fact, the Navy. So what happened?
South African Navy. You remember? Actually, I went to read more about this after we spoke about it on Monday. You know these drills, the naval drills, they are planned months in advance.
Sure.
It's not...
For those that don't know what happened.
Okay.
So there were war games, naval drill between BRICS member states.
Yeah.
So South Africa, China. Russia, China, Iran.
Iran, yes. And then there have been more.
And then jiggy, there are riots in Iran, there are protests in Iran. And then we're told that the commander-in-chief, Ramaphosa, made an order that the Iranians must be told that they can't participate anymore.
Yes.
They can just be spectators in the games.
Yes.
But this was a couple of days before the games are meant to happen.
Yeah. Yes.
And then it didn't happen. So now there's meant to be an inquiry into insubordination as to why were the Iranians a part of the party that they were invited to. But now someone was asked to say to the Iranians, we're sorry you've come all this way. You can't play with us anymore.
You can't participate, yes.
Yes.
Well, first of all, this naval practices in South Africa started in 2019.
Yes.
We have had them with China and Russia. And then in 2023, it happened. And you will recall in 2023, it started raising eyebrows of many other countries, especially the US, because it happened on the anniversary of Russia occupying Ukraine.
Yes.
So it was the anniversary, so it rose eyebrows. But it didn't cause a lot of storm. You know, it was like, South Africa, why are you participating with Russia? And South Africa responded by saying, but we had planned this thing prior and long before. Now, in this current instance, I don't know why didn't President Ramaphosa and Derek, or the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, say to those who were making noise like the Americans, this thing was planned prior, months before, and the Iranians are already in our waters. You understand? The naval ships are already here. That's
why do we need to explain ourselves?
I mean, diplomatically, if you want to appease your other friends and people you have diplomatic relations with, or issue a statement, not respond to the Americans.
Okay.
Especially on the basis that we issued a statement from through Derek to the Iranians to say don't use violence on peaceful protesters.
Yes, yes.
Along those lines, we could have actually already said this matter is a BRICS arrangement.
Yes.
It was actually it's a rotational naval practice. Rotational in a sense that the one for 2019, it was Russia. The one for 2023, it was China. Mm. I mean, South Africa, the one for 2026, it was China. The host, it's South Africa. Mm. But the leading, the nation that invites other member states or other friends or naval countries, it was China in this instance.
Okay.
And China invited Russia and Iran to say, in terms of the BRICS resolution on guarding our waters, the practice is going to happen in South Africa. South Africa is going to host us.
Okay.
And you are invited. So China invited.
So China gave Mr. Party Ronari venue.
Ronari venue, yes. Okay. If you want to simplify it.
Okay.
Yes, we were the venue. Now, it is well within the rights of South Africa to can say to China, I don't want Iran in my waters. But sure. South Africa didn't do that until the riots and America's protest.
Yes.
Remember, this happened during the week when America wanted to attack Iran for political reasons.
Mm.
And then the riots started also in Iran during that week.
Mm.
And I think it put pressure on South Africa, but it was too late.
Now, the U.S. Embassy issued a statement.
Yes.
About us playing with Iran. And for me, the biggest irony was the U.S. Embassy is issuing a statement about us playing with Iran, but they are dipping their hands into other countries and kidnapping presidents.
Exactly.
For me, it's very rich.
Yeah, that, of them doing that.
That ubizi umura fro, but you want to say to me, why are you shouting at your children?
At your children, yes. And that's what exactly the Americans are doing. And when we are entering into the same exercises, similar exercise with the USA, And Ethiopia or Egypt, last year in February, there was no problem. And America was still, we were in court in the ICJ, International Court of Justice, against Israel that is being armed by the USA. And we still went to the waters.
So we had war games.
We had war games.
With warmongers.
With warmongers. And it looked
And that's acceptable.
And it was acceptable.
Okay.
And I think we bent too much for the USA. But regarding what has happened in the Navy, whether it was insubordination or disregard of the commander-in-chief orders, we'll have to hear the outcome, because the Democratic Alliance and Action SA political parties have asked this matter to be taken to Parliament to question why was the president ignored. But remember, both those political parties are anti-Iran.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
So, Akire, we're having war games.
Mm.
And it becomes an international relations issue at some stage.
Yeah.
Where we must... Is it a military attaché?
Yes, the we do have in Tehran a military attaché.
So
a diplomat from the South African Navy or Defense Force.
If there are protocols followed to invite, why are the same protocols not followed to say, maybe don't come to the party anymore? Why is it now reduced to one person?
Look, there's a lot of mistakes that happen here in my observation.
Yes.
The timing. It was too late because the Iranians were already here.
They're here.
Yes. True, it depends when the president gave orders.
Sure.
Who did he give orders to? Logically or procedurally, he should have given the orders to Meenjie Motshekga as the minister of. Then the minister will talk to the counterpart, Minister Lamola, to say, inform the embassy in Tehran, to inform the authorities there, while on this side of the counter, domestically, Minister Enjie Motshekga will have talked to the general or the most senior person of the South African Navy. But now, remember, these are technocrats. They will be able to advise the political heads, the ministers, to say, Minister, it's already late. These people are already here, and we have a bilateral or a multilateral agreement. We can't just abruptly cut them out. And the diplomats on the other side will advise. If I was in Tehran representing the country, I would have said to Minister Lamola, it will not look good with our bilateral relations with Iran, because we are bowing to the pressure of another country.
Mm.
And therefore, but we have planned this thing timeously with them. They are already in the waters.
Now for me, it's simple.
Mm.
If the general responsible for insubordination or being accused of insubordination was the one who extended the invite to the Iranians.
Absolutely not.
Then, yes, there's been insubordination in him not saying to the Iranians, listen, we know you're here, but please just be observers.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yes, there's insubordination.
Okay.
But if it was not the general who sent the invite to the Iranians, then I don't think the general has done anything wrong.
You know, you have never worked for government. You don't know that when it's time to clean the poo-poo, political office bearers never do it. They send us as civil servants to do that.
But I was not there when you started the party.
Yeah, you see, that's where insubordination comes in. You don't question your political principles. I got into trouble many times by doing that. They don't want.
But I know there's protocols.
Protocols, if they are one-sided.
Why do protocols matter when we're inviting but not when we're disengaging?
Yeah, it's look, I think we are having a serious challenge in our National Defense Force. And whether it's Navy, whether, you know, it happened a few months back with, again, it was Iran.
Because it smells like...
the army general who went to Iran, yes. And then...
Is it the same? And then there was the Navy chief who complained that we were ill-equipped.
That's the one who is in trouble now.
That's why Kiri, I suspect that we were going to...
I personally think there are challenges in the South African National Defense Force. Whether it's Navy, whether it's Army, I think there are very serious challenges. We haven't heard much about the Air Force and complaints. They just complain that they don't have enough equipment and serviced Air Force. But look, if I was President Ramaphosa, I would reshuffle Mzimunza. I think there's also a silent rebellion between the army generals and the political heads.
Sure.
I think there's a silent rebellion, and they're not comfortable in working with them because we never had these challenges before. We have been having complaints that the South African National Defense Force is not getting enough resources from the Treasury. But we have always seen the head or the political head going or marching along with the generals. At a moment, they're doing separate things.
You know what I look forward to?
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to a time where the Minister of Defense is someone who's been in the army, where the Minister of Police has served
in the police,
where the Minister of Health, like with Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi,
like we had Dr.
experience.
Yes, they know
like,
what they're doing.
The Minister of Arts and Culture has been within the arts and culture. They're not just an appointee for the sake of we must look out for our people.
Yeah.
Yes, look out for your people, but look out for your people who've maybe worked within. Who understand how people on the ground might be feeling.
You know, at the beginning of the dawn of democracy, I would have understood the first 5 years.
Yes.
But, you know, it takes you 5 to 10 years to can breed or groom a person to can occupy an office. And I think we have long matured to can have political heads, even from municipality, you know, who are experts in that field.
Yes.
We wouldn't be having some of the challenges that we are sitting with. You know, if you are going to appoint Minister of Science and Technology, let it be somebody who has a diploma or degree in that field or has worked in that field.
Or a qualified scientist.
Or a qualified scientist. And we do have those people.
But they...
Even in your political party, you will find one or two people who are experts in a certain field. And I think our democracy has matured to can start appointing people into political positions who are experts in field. We are doing it as an NPA, we are doing it as public protector, and all. Why are we not doing it across the board and sectors? But you know what is going to help us? The new act that is still sitting in President Ramaphosa's desk to sign. Remember in December when we closed this, an act of amendment of the Public Service Act in appointing public servants, no more deployment. They must go through, especially civil servants. I think that will aid the situation. But let them extend it to mayor, governor, what do you call them, premier, and ministers. Let them have experience in that field. They will have appreciation of their work because they come from that field.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like me making Botsang a minister of health. When I don't take injections and I don't take, you know, white men's medicines or foreign medicines, I'm going to take people's amopeitang instead of going to the laboratory medicines. But deploy people where they are experts.
Absolutely. So do you think Gapa, the general?
Not the general, the minister. Oh, you mean the general? I think Baba Tomunu. I think, I met last week Friday with one of the, I knew about the story before it broke out on Sunday newspapers, one of the intelligence officers, and he told me that guy is in serious trouble. And because he defied the minister. But if I put myself in the shoes of that general, first, the party is on. You are there. People are here. Imagine me going to tell, I'm the host, and I'm going to tell the people who are at the party, they said you must not sit at the chair. That was already
watch
in
from
your
the
name.
Gate. Watch from the
stand
gate.
Stand there by the gate and watch the party. It doesn't work like that, guys. It doesn't. And I wonder if South Africa will do the same to a country like the U.S. Will we stand up today and tell the U.S., don't come to our country, you are killing people in Israel, in Palestine. You understand? You have abducted a sitting president of a sovereign state. Why don't we tell America that? We issued a statement, but we must tell America we're not going to talk to you anymore. You understand? Because we have abducted President Maduro. Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's again Animal Farm. Some countries are more important to us than others. Somebody will say to me, but Botswana, that is reality.
Time is running away. Let's go to the ad hoc committee in Parliament. Your friend, Robert McBride, and I'm saying your friend as a part of us making a disclaimer.
Okay.
You have a relationship with McBride.
A very good friend.
Frustana, Frustana.
Yeah.
He was in front of the ad hoc committee co-parliamenting this week. What are your thoughts on his testimony? What are your thoughts on the energy in the room? What are your thoughts on some members of parliament feeling like, why are you cocky towards us and even threatening us when we ask you about your daughter?
Why did they ask Robert about his daughter?
I think it was a bit cheeky to ask him about his daughter, but like he said, hey, watch it. Eh?
Yeah. But like you said, we have been friends for many years. We used to be colleagues together at Derco. We still keep our brotherhood and friendship. You know why? Let me start with the daughter question. Why was it so sensitive to him? Do you remember where the story came from? It came from he was once arrested and charged for beating the daughter. Like being a parent.
Yes.
In fact,
he said he was disciplining him.
He was disciplining him.
Yes.
It was all over the media. And,
yes.
And once people raise issues politically about my own kids, to say, well, then you have been to maintenance court, you have beat your child, I'll be cocky. I don't want my kids to be dragged into my work.
Sure.
And I'm not defending him. I'm saying that's the reason he's doing that. But I think the testimony of Mr. McBride, it was a waste of time. I think, and I said it before he went there, I've said it to a few people, that he will see Robert is going to be evasive. He's not going to answer the questions. And when he's cornered, he will actually be edgy. He will be angry with some of that. And he did exactly what I said. It's because I've worked with him and I know him. But again, Fresh, you take one of the questions they asked primarily on day one was, where do you work? What do you do? And you ask a spy, what do you do? Should I stand up?
I'm a spook. I'm not going to tell you where I'm
going
to tell you where I'm posted.
Let me tell you what I think should have happened.
Yes.
That committee, knowing who is Mr. McBride and what he's doing, because now he has been exposed. You know what I'm saying? Now our counterparts, they know what he's doing, because they went to Google and search and ask questions, and they found out that actually his contract that started in 2020 to 2025, because the 5-year contract has ended last year at the SSA, and he was the head of the Foreign Intelligence Wing. Now he's still there, and he was forced to push to a corner to admit that I'm still there doing some ad hoc jobs. And I'm being paid for that. I'm not in a specific position. That's exposing a person. The artwork committee acted recklessly and irresponsibly there. They should have caucused first and say, like the Matlanga Commission was doing with other people, the kind of person we are bringing into the seat, we must not subject him to public scrutiny of asking about your background and your job. That would have been irresponsible committee to to say, let's not get into what are you doing, where do you work, because we know what he's doing. But they failed to protect, you know, his job and his identity. Now he's exposed. He's an exposed person too. But also, when you look at the questions, except the questions towards Paul O'Sullivan, the guy who has featured a lot, who has now left the country and is refusing to come and testify except in camera, the relationship between Mr. McBride and Paul O'Sullivan. And Robert McBride said, look, it was a good source of information. He's got resources, he's got information, and I was using him as and when I needed info from him. And one of the reasons he gave was Paul O'Sullivan hates corruption and he hates corrupt people, and it worked and it helped him when he was at IPIT. But I don't think the ad hoc committee got enough of helpful information from Mr. McBride, because he either just blatantly denied insinuations or allegations of other people who came before him, or he accepted them and said, yes, it's the truth, and it's on paper, it's on record. I didn't find him giving anything meat towards what we are trying to find out. Remember, what we are trying to find out, it's also the infiltration of external people like Mary Diaz, as well as O'Sullivan and other corrupt elements into IPIT, the police and the criminal justice system. I don't think we benefited much. I think it was a 2 day of wasted time. I saw his old charm and glamour when he, and you know, you can see people who were trained very well, as that when you are cornered and you are unable to answer the question, you just crack a joke and smile at them to be evasive.
Deflector.
Yeah, you deflect from the whole thing. I saw that happening a lot. But there was another element. I've said it before. You know, it depends who is at the chair in that committee. The conduct of politicians changes. People were very gentle towards, except the lady from Action SA. You understand? People were very gentle, you know, showing that respect towards Mr. McBride. And you could see even a political party like Umkhonto Wesizwe, where some of the people on that committee were guerrillas of Umkhonto Wesizwe, the ANC, and with Robert McBride. Some in that room had served time in jail with him. Now, it's going to be very difficult. Imagine if I'm being asked to interrogate Robert McBride. Where will I start? I would have actually recused myself from that process. But he is also a liked person amongst the former liberation movement or political parties, black political parties. Generally, people regard him as a hero.
Kikrotman.
Yeah. So it was also very difficult. People were subtle. I don't say people should scream at the top of their voice, but they're asking soft questions. And where he was evasive, they let him get away with it. The chairperson of the committee was making jokes. I like Soviet Lekhanyat, but he was making jokes with Mr. McBride throughout the 2 days. And on the first day, he had actually even given orders to members not to interject him, not to interrupt him. If they've got cross-questioning or clarity-seeking questions, they should reserve them until the evidence leaders are done. Why did they do that? I think Soviet Lekhanyat knew how irritable Robert McBride will get if he's been interjected. I think that was a clever political move, clever management. They managed the situation, but it's not fair because others were not allocated the same.
Yeah, they're not given the same grace.
Yes, they were not given the same. But I got nothing from Robert McBride in. And I understand, Fresh. Look, I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying I understand why he was withholding. You know, some of the things we don't talk about them that we have done for government. And how you do things as well. You don't talk about them. I'll go down the grave with some of the things that I've done for government without talking about them, no matter how excited I get. You just will go down the grave with that kind of information. And I'm glad he's gone, done, and moved. The Madlanga Commission must not call him. Waste of time.
Let's move to the DA quickly. Dr. Dion George resigned from the DA live on TV last week. But he also made claims involving the DA and agriculture and farming. But it almost feels like those claims have been allowed to leave with Dion George. What are your thoughts on those claims and accusations?
Even us, we let it slip because we okay, but he made the claims after he resigned about the Democratic Alliance is involved in, and it's an allegation that comes from one of their, you know, former leaders and a minister in the cabinet, that they are engaged in illegal farming and breeding of lions for trophy hunting. And the outcomes, and that is being used, or the platform of the Minister of Agriculture, who is Mr. Steenhuisen, they are using his portfolio to can conduct these illegal activities in order to fund the Democratic Alliance. Look, that is his allegations, and the DA has just, you know, brush this aside, but my concern is not the Democratic Alliance. My concern is other political parties, including the presidency, when such serious allegations are made against one of the executive members, especially a serious portfolio like agriculture, to say Mr. Steenhuisen is abusing that portfolio in order to fund the DA for the benefit of the Democratic Alliance. And then you find the opposition parties, and I'll mention the top three, which is Umkhonto is a party, Economic Freedom Fighters, as well as Action SA. They are silent about this serious allegation made by the former DA leader, who many will dismiss as an upset or angry ex-spouse. And why are they quiet? Why is President Ramaphosa's office quiet, not to question Mrs. Steenhuisen? To bring us to confidence that our Minister of Agriculture is not actually abusing his office as the minister in the GNU and the minister of the country to can fund his own political path. Imagine if Gaitin McKenzie starts organizing sports or cultural activities in order to fund the PA, or the noise we will get in the country, or any other party for that matter. Imagine if it happens, or even the ANC itself. Imagine if one of the ANC ministers abuses their position in the cabinet to fund the ANC. There will be noise. The Democratic Alliance will not keep quiet about it. And why is the nation quiet about this whole process for a party that has been talking ethics and anti-corruption? If they didn't do it, if it's not happening, let them come out and explain themselves. But I'm not going to just dismiss Dr. Dion Diouf to say he's an angry former member of the DA or leader. What disappoints me with him is you wait to resign first. You have been enjoying it. Probably you are a hunter yourself. You have killed some of those animals and got a trophy. Why say it after?
So,
but the information is before us. What are we doing with that information about the conduct or allegations of the conduct of the DA leader?
What are your thoughts on his comments about how the appointment of Willy Oukamp to replace him amounts to cadre deployment and is to maintain the status quo and not upset some of what his commercial interests within canned hunting?
It's again supporting his statement. Who was the DA supposed to appoint? Because like that portfolio is allocated to the DA in terms of the GNU agreement. I don't understand.
And it's a global practice. If I'm in government, I will bring my people in.
Yeah, but let's even leave global. He himself was appointed to a portfolio in the executive of the country. Didn't he complain? Why didn't he complain that no, but it's a cadre deployment? If there's a GNU agreement that says the DA will bring 7 or 8 ministers and there's a vacancy, who was the DA supposed to appoint if they feel that Oukamp is the best person for that position? And again, I think he's trying to knit this wool and weave it to demonstrate that they want to continue their hobbies using the government or the political party. And I think he was doing this in order to irritate other factions of the DA, if there are factions. You understand what I'm saying? To say to the other factions, Steenhuisen is bringing Oukamp because Oukamp has interest in hunting. So they want to continue their practice at the expense of government. But everybody who gets into government is there to eat. It's not there to serve the people. But this is a test for us because the disciplinary hearing or charges against the leader of the DA, Mr. Steenhuisen, and they are still outstanding. So maybe it's an opportunity for the Democratic Alliance now to add to the investigation the allegations against Steenhuisen by Dr. Dion. I think that will bring good confidence to their followers and members.
Sure.
If they can do that. We can even discipline the leader of the party. Gaitin has set a standard with Kenny Gunene. The ANC has dismally failed in disciplining any of their leaders. So let the DA show us that they are good to do what they claim to be doing.
Let's wrap it up with Davos, since we're talking discipline.
Is there discipline in Davos?
Trump arrived Davos. It was weird. It was weird watching his little rant about, I want Greenland. which he later called Iceland, because geographically, I don't think he's very astute.
No, but you know why he called it that?
Mm.
Because he said it's a piece of ice.
It's a piece of ice, yes.
It's a block that he wants to just have.
And I want to know what your thoughts are on one Trump's threat, because he said, we're not going to use force, but even if we use force, we'll crush you. I mean, he's using language that I think in the history of the world, the last time we heard language like that was probably during Hitler's time.
Mm.
The last time we heard language like that.
That's why I call him the new Hitler.
And I was blown away. And the fact that he's even quoting movies talking about, if it wasn't for the good old US of A, all of you would be speaking German. Never in the history of diplomacy, I don't think, has anyone been prepared for such an address of world leaders. And the fact that it's only Canada, the Prime Minister of Canada, who stood up and said, we need to stop entertaining this guy.
Fresh.
But every other world leader is watching. Some are there on some yes bus. Others are there on some Ish Nomayin in Jayam.
Fresh, let me tell you, the first thing that has happened was that Trump invited himself to the business meeting in Davos. He decided, I'll lead this delegation before the time other presidents come. I'll go there and address it. But we gave, or the world is giving, Donald J. Trump a platform to can mess the world up. We are allowing him. He has demonstrated what they call themselves superpowers. He's demonstrating it, because if other countries are starting to clap hands and beg like the principal is here, and it's us who are creating that environment. You are speaking about German language, the all other countries. By the way, he is technically right. They're not all the countries, but America. I learned when I studied German. Actually, I was surprised years back, 20 years back. Do you know that they went into a referendum in the USA to decide whether English or German should be the official language? And it's historically, it's on record. And they say the English language won with a slight margin. It could have been German, the official language. And it's in the history. When I learned that, I was surprised. But that's nonsense also, what he's talking to say. They won the war against Germany, and they defeated Germany, and they defended Greenland and handed it over on a platter to Denmark. The World War II was a cluster of...
There were allied forces.
There were allied forces that fought together. Yes, America may have then, or even today, been the superpower with better arms. We don't know if they're still... Because we have not tested that.
And Glenn, the U.S. came right at the tail end.
Exactly.
After Pearl Harbor, then the U.S. were like, okay, let's go there.
Let's go there, because we demonstrated with Pearl Harbor what we are capable of doing for a tiny Japan. Understand? And I think also President Trump, I don't know, Fresh, you know, when a human being goes and misconstrues facts and or lie in front of nations, in front of doctors, lawyers, business people, scientists, and presidents and prime ministers, and you lie. You still continue and say to Heidi Giokos, the journalist from South Africa, there are very serious things happening in South Africa. Very bad things are happening there. We have records. We have, what did you call it? We have statistics and reports. Where does he get those things from? The fact that he calls President Putin and President Zelensky, that if they're not going to reach a peace agreement, they'll be stupid people. What kind of a head of state speaks like that except Donald Trump? But thumbs up, lately President Macron of France, but primarily President or the Prime Minister of Canada, to stand up against President Trump. Oh, you understand too? I think the Prime Minister of Canada has done something great. Ignore this man. Because the more you challenge him, is the more you are aggravating him. You know, if you can give him silent diplomacy, and I think South Africa should enter that route, we must just stop begging to talk to America. We've done our part. We must just ignore them and focus our energy, efforts, and resources in building relations and improving relations with other countries.
Yeah, but Bozal the Third is on the way here, so we can't ignore them. And he's going to be here with one goal.
He must come here, Boson the Third. He must come here, and President Ramaphosa must accept his credentials. He must sit at Acadia, at the American embassy, and DERCO must don't give him meetings like the Americans are doing with our diplomats, refusing to meet them. We are still having ABC journalists sitting at the DTI, having coffee and any money for nothing as a special envoy. We should do the same. ignore them. We are not fighting them. We are not confronting them. We are not challenging them. Ignore them. And I think it will make a person like, you know, Donald Trump to defocus from us and focus on other things. We've got a lot of our internal as well external multilateral challenges that we are faced with as a nation. And I think the world has allowed and entertained the American president. This 1 year he's been in office. And look, you want us. You want us, like, guys, buckle up. Last year in January already, we were like, buckle up. It's 1 year. The anniversary was during the week when he was inaugurated on the 20th. And look how he has rattled the world. But look at the backtrack regarding what he said in Davos. He woke up a day after and said, no, I'm not going to use force. Yes, we have a mighty force. We can use that. NATO and Europe have been unfair. They've abused us, but we won't use it. Me, I just wanted them to give me that piece of block of ice. I think he has backed down.
I don't think he's backed down. And I think we're not making enough noise about the threat right at the end of his statement. That if you refuse with Greenland, I won't forget. And he means that.
Yeah, but I think he's going to punish them with something else besides forcefully taking or occupying Greenland. What I think Americans are going to do, they're going to deploy. They already have a number of, and for years they started being 12,000, then they became 15,000. I've heard there are now less than 2,000 military personnel in Greenland. They've been there for years. I think he's going to increase the number of military presence in there. He's going to deploy maybe fighter jets and submarines, you know, or in a spirit of, no, but we've been here in international waters and cooperation. I don't think the U.S. is at a moment, and I said it last week, in a position to can use any military or a might or force against any European country, especially Western Europe. They are capable of destroying the entire Europe. Europe did not invest a lot on what you call it, on military arsenals and equipment. But I don't think it's in a position to do that.
Yes.
There's three or four European countries, the UK and the Scandinavian countries, France, and to some extent Germany, who will stand up against the US. And I don't think he wants something like that at the moment. I think he's going to look for other ways and measures to can punish those who opposed him. I think he's going to do that. But you know what's funny? Africa and Asia are sitting and looking at these former colonizers and imperialists fighting each other. Putin and Xi Jinping must actually be having a role.
Hey, back in the morning, they want Taiwan and everyone wants a piece of somewhere.
A piece of somewhere.
Now, my worry is, and you know, remember I said last week that unfortunately what we're witnessing is that what we all need to learn, whether we're political or not, that might is right, that if you have brute force and you're not afraid to use your brute force and to have your way, that is where the world is going. If you don't have mafia tendencies, you are nothing. If you're not going to operate like some mafia cartel, you're nothing.
You're nothing.
That's what that's what's been demonstrated to us. You know, what stops Eritrea in the Horn of Africa all of a sudden being told you're mine now?
Yeah.
What stops Caprivi Strip from being taken by Botswana, Namibia, Angola? What stops us from saying to Lesotho, ah, man, just come here. You are here already.
The time province.
You are here.
Yeah. It depends on
you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now for me, it's a slippery slope. And the fact that world leaders are quiet, it's sad.
Well, I think it has been the practice. But it had to take Donald Trump.
It was never this explicit.
Yes. It's just explicit about what these countries have been doing. I mean, people were excited about the capturing of President Maduro. America has done it before. Several times. They've done it in Hawaii. They've done it in Panama. They've done it in Libya and Iraq. So it's not new. It's just that Donald Trump is explicit about it and is reckless about it. And the danger to the Americans is they've put a very reckless president in office who has... I didn't know that American presidents have so much powers that you can wake up and just change things as you want. What kind of a constitution is that where a head of state can just do as they want and even defy court orders and judges and gets away with it? And so I don't know if that's constitutional democracy or that's democracy, what is happening there.
I don't
but
think
Americans are not safe.
I don't think the American founding fathers, ever in their wildest nightmares, thought an unhinged person
would be head of state,
would be in the White House and have the audacity to give the Constitution a middle finger.
Yeah.
And exclude Congress in certain decisions that might need congressional support or weigh in. I don't think even in the wildest nightmares did they think someone who's not measured, someone who, with audacity to tell 30,000 lies during his first term without batting an eyelid.
But the Americans brought him back. Yeah, the first term, and there's the difference here. Trump was in office before. The same American people, they brought him back. Mm. What does it say about them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Be out of time.
Thanks, my brother. Let's go home.
I'm going to abduct you from the show. And we'll bring you back again next week.
What might will you use to have that information?
I know people. Brother man, where do we find you on social media?
Flash, can the followers find me on botangm@gmail.com on email and @botangm on all social media handles and 083-884-7787 on WhatsApp only.
Please don't forget this is your show and this show is only as good or interactive or balanced as your participation. So please comment, share, subscribe even. The more of you we can have on board, the bigger the pie and the party can be. So thank you to every single one of you for tuning in to Wow What A Week, #Politrix with Fresh and Botsang. Coming to you from Discover TV, Let Them Be Your Stage. Shout out to Keletso Modisekeng. She is our executive producer. And Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography. Until next week, we are out of here. Have yourselves a wow week in spite of yourselves.